Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Crossroads. My name is Steve, and my gosh, you guys are here. I can't believe it. You know, John and Suzanne just got married on Friday. Let's give them a hand, and they're in church. I said he had a hall pass, but... And John's dad, and it's like, that's great. I'm here right now, I think. We're kind of in this bizarre time of life where we're trying to move and leave you wonderful people, which is going to be really difficult, and go to Colorado, and our kids are there, and you're going to be close to your kids, but not too close. You know, it's like, here's a baby diaper. And so we're in the middle of that. We're buying a house, sort of. We haven't given them any money yet, but we told them we would. And then we're trying to sell our house, you know, and Darlene's a realtor, so she knows everything to do to get it ready. And she says, all this stuff's got to go. And it's like, oh, no. So yesterday, I texted a bunch of you and just said, and it's wonderful to live in Texas because everybody has a truck. I'm the only person that doesn't have a truck. So a bunch of guys came over, and Darlene said, the trucks are here. And like four guys with trucks came over, and we did all this stuff. And it's amazing because we took all this stuff from our house to a storage facility, and these guys were just awesome. I appreciated it. Thank you, guys. I feel much closer to you now. You know, I was looking behind me in the rearview mirror because I'm kind of leading this pack now, this posse, and you know, there's like all these trucks behind and trying to keep them all together. And then when I was driving, it only took an hour because, you know, when you get a bunch of people together and do it, it's like pretty quick. I never could have done that. I'm driving home going, I would be in the ER if I had tried doing that. I kissed my knee and my foot, you know, and I actually have a shoe on today, which is awesome, but it's still healing, and my back and all this stuff. I couldn't have done it without these guys. So that was pretty awesome. And so I feel more unified with these people, and that's kind of a transition to our whole topic here today. We're doing a series on unity in the church. We want to be a unified church. Frankly, you know what you can do to help Charlie? Everybody's going, what can I do to help Charlie? Here's what you can do. You can go out and make some friends and bring him to church, right? Make friends, bring him to church. And you know, when people show up at church, they can tell pretty soon if it's a fake place or an authentic place. I think this is a very authentic place. But so you can do that. And so we're doing this series, and someone asked, are we doing a series on unity because we don't have any unity? No, that was a logical question, but I think we have a lot of unity, but unity only lasts like a day at a time, right? You know, unity in your marriage lasts one day, and then the next day you have to choose all over again to be unified. So we started out in Acts chapter 2. We said we watched how the Spirit came and pulled all these people together. And just like us in this room, how many of us would know each other if it wasn't for Christ? So, you know, he's brought us together and the Spirit moved. And there was tremendous unity on that very first, you know, kind of honeymoon time in the church's life. And then we talked about choosing unity in Philippians 2. It doesn't always come naturally. So Paul said, if you've been blessed at all by your relationship with Christ, choose to be unified. Just get along, please. And then Charlie talked in Galatians 5 about serving. If you notice through this series, things are taking a little bit more effort every time. And so we talked about serving one another. And then last week he talked about being patient. And today I'm going to talk, it's going to go even further. We're going to talk about carrying each other's burdens. And it's a big difference between, I thought about this, going to church and being the church. You know what it's like? You know, you can go to church, but then getting involved and being part of other people's lives, and that's being the church. And this is going to happen to Darlene and I. I'm looking for a job in Colorado, and if I get a job in a church, I'll probably go to that church. It would sort of make sense, don't you think? But let's say I don't. Then we're going to have to find a church. And you know those Saturday night conversations? Don't you hate those when you haven't found a church yet? It's like, well, I like that church, and I like that church. Where are we going to go tomorrow morning? I don't know. And then you choose a church, and you're so grateful because at least you don't have that conversation on Saturday night anymore. Like, you know where you're going to go, or at least you know which one you're going to skip the next day. So, it's a church joke, right? So anyway, we're going to have to do that. And you know, you start going, it's like, okay, we're going to go, and we like it enough to go the next week, and then the next week. And then it's like, then after a while, you start thinking, wow, what's it going to take to get more involved? That's like another big step, right? The difference between going to church and being the church. And so you want to be in a place where we're for one another, that you are actually, I'm for you, you're for me. It's kind of like any great sports team. I was never on a great sports team, but they tell me that it feels like, you know, it doesn't matter if you've got a superstar or two, the teams that tend to win are the ones that tend to work together, right? They're for each other. I've never been in the military. I've never been in a war zone, but they say, you know, yeah, I may believe in our cause. I may believe that our country ought to be in this battle, but primarily I'm here for the other guys. They're watching my back. I'm watching theirs. And so that's what this whole thing is about, unity, creating an authentic place where we're actually for one another. And here we are in Galatians chapter 6. So if you've got a Bible of any sort, look at Galatians 6, and we're going to talk about carrying one another's burdens, taking a step and getting a little bit more involved in each other's lives, which can be frightening, right? So the very first verse, he's been talking about walking in the Spirit. What difference does it make if I'm living by the Spirit, which simply means depending on God, or just living in the flesh, which means I'm depending on myself and I'm totally self-absorbed? So in verse 1, it talks about what happens when we sin. We're all sinners, right? We're going to continue to sin. The reason, the ticket to get in here is that you have to admit you're a sinner, right? That's how we come into the church. I admit that I'm a sinner. I have this need. And we don't stop. We stop sinning less, but we still continue to make mistakes. What do we do when somebody else makes a mistake? What do we do when we make a mistake? That's what this verse is about. Actually, it doesn't talk much about the sinner. It talks about the person that responds to that sin. If we're in a close-knit family church setting, how do we respond when we see something in somebody else's life? Are we like the Pharisee that goes, oh yeah, there's that guy? Like the Pharisee, Jesus was talking about the guy that said, oh Lord, thank you so much that I'm not like this tax collector over here. Just this totally, you know, arrogant attitude. And so it says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin. Now, the wording there is kind of interesting because obviously when I sin, it's my fault. I've chosen it. It's wrong. But there's also a bigger picture in which there's spiritual warfare. And sin is also something that's kind of outside of us wanting to get us. Let me give you this example in Genesis chapter 4. You know, you got the first family on earth. You've got Adam and Eve, and of course, they become sinners, so all their kids are sinners, you know, and they have Cain and Abel. And Abel's doing okay, but Cain's not. Cain is kind of messed up, and so God comes to him and says, what's the deal with you, Cain? You're all messed up. I can tell you're angry. And he says this, if you don't do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must rule over it. So in a sense, there's this idea that sin is kind of outside of us wanting to get us. And nobody really wants to sin. We end up choosing sin because we think it's going to be fine. It never delivers. It always screws everything up. And we know that not sinning is following Christ, and he really makes life so much better. And so what happens when you see somebody? What kind of a person do you want approaching you if you've made a mistake? Brothers and sisters, if someone's caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently, but watch yourselves or you also may be tempted. Now remember, Paul is talking to this audience of people that are mostly Gentiles. They didn't grow up in church because there wasn't such a thing as church. They weren't even growing up in temple because they weren't Jews. Most of them were Gentiles. They've never had this kind of thing going on. They didn't have any Holy Bible to guide their lives. And so they're going to make all kinds of mistakes. And he says, if this happens, you don't go beating each other up. You don't shame the other person. Here's four things. Number one, they're operating, you know, when someone's sinning, when I'm sinning, I'm operating in the flesh, I'm selfish, I'm just kind of focused on me. But if somebody's walking in the Spirit, now that's not a special category of Christians, it's any Christian. A Christian can be a month old as a Christian. And it simply means I'm somebody who's just getting up in the morning and I'm saying, God, thank you for another day. I need your help really bad today. But I know that I am one in whom you dwell and delight. And I also know that I live in the strong and unshakable kingdom of God. and that's not going to change. So I need a lot of help today. I've got decisions to make, people to be with. Please help me every step of the way. And when I get off track, pull me back on. That's somebody who's walking in the Spirit. It's just as simple as that. So you who live by the Spirit should approach this person and restore them. You want to bring them back. That's the whole point. You're not going to shame them. You're not going to kick them out. You want to bring them back. It's because we all realize we could be that person next time, right? You want to do it gently. That's the word meekness, humility. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. So you want somebody that goes, you know, I'm not holier than you. This could be me next time. So, and maybe you come alongside the person and say, you know, I could be wrong. Please correct me. It just seems like maybe you've kind of made a mistake in this area, and just tell me if I'm wrong. So I was in college. I was overseas, and this other Christian guy, we were talking one day, and I wasn't really going to church services. I just kind of was having fun and doing all kinds of stuff, and a lot of stuff happened on Sundays. And so he goes, so where are you going to church tomorrow? I go, oh, you know, there's a mountain climbing group I want to be with, and I'm going to go do that. And all he said was, he said, Steve, Hebrews 10:25. And he just walked away. And his name was Mark. And I'm like, what? I don't know what that means. I don't have the Bible memorized. I had to go find a Bible somewhere. That took a while. And then I had to look it up, and it said, which I now remember, let's not neglect our meeting together as some people do. So he was like yelling at me for not going to church, and it took me a while to figure it out. And when I did figure it out, it just made me mad. It didn't make me want to go to church. It just made me hate Mark because the way he did that. Now, we got over it, and we became friends. Sort of. But that's not the way to do it. You know, just like throw a Bible verse at somebody and just walk away. It just didn't help. Didn't make me want to do it, right? So you want somebody who's walking with God to come alongside and go, you know what? You're probably not, I see you're doing this thing, but you're probably not going to enjoy it. It's going to wreck your life, maybe. And so I just want to bring you back on track. And, you know, because I need your help because it could be me next time, right? So when we started out doing ministry, for like the first 10 years, it was a singles group. It was like 200 people in this group. And so we kind of ran it like this church. In other words, you'd have a big gathering, and then you had all these small groups. And we had all these small group leaders, and they'd come over to our house every Thursday night. It was a lot of fun. And there was a guy named Alan, and Alan was in charge of a small group. And Alan had gone through a divorce, and it wasn't his fault, and he was trying to get his life on track. But Alan was acting out in some interesting ways, and everybody kind of found out after a while. And it wasn't like really, really horrible, but it was like, Alan, no, don't be doing that on the weekends. And so I was the leader, so I had to go talk to Alan at some point, right? And I'm thinking maybe he needs to take a break or whatever from leadership, because he's not really being a leader right now. He's just kind of going nuts. And so I thought, I've got to go talk to Alan. And I didn't want to talk to Alan. I don't like to confront people, you know. So I called Alan and I said, had the whole thing figured out. Let's go to lunch. So Alan and I go to lunch. I didn't even say anything. I didn't even mention the whole thing to because I didn't have the guts. And so finally, we go through the whole lunch and I've gone, okay. So we drive back to the church where we parked. And I said, can we sit down for a second? So we sit down on the curb and I'm getting ready to launch into my whole thing. And I go, Alan? And he goes, I know. I go, what? And he goes, I know my life is kind of messed up right now, and I love the group, and I'm doing this stuff, and I need to stop, and I need to get back on board, and da-da-da-da-da, and I probably should take a break for a while. And I'm like, well, I didn't even get a chance to say all that stuff, and you just already did it, because that's who he was, you know? That's where his heart was. He really wanted to walk with Christ, and he's just having some troubles, but I remember thinking, you know, that's the way it ought to be. He already knew. He knew what was going on. And so, you know, it turned out great with Alan. But it's not easy. You know, we feel like, oh, I'm invading somebody else's space. Somebody else will say something, right? And you're not always the right person if you're the victim of somebody's sin. Sometimes it takes somebody else. And again, you want to go with humility and you want to restore and you want to have the sense, I need this too. So that's verse 1. Verse 2 says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ. So in a sense, these are tied together, but I don't think carrying burdens in verse 2 is necessarily dealing with someone's sin like in verse 1. I think it's another topic. And so it says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you'll fulfill the law of Christ. And if you've been reading through Galatians and you're going through there, you realize, wait a minute. Paul has spent the entire book saying we're not under the law, and now he's saying they're under the law? No. The whole book has been saying you're not under the Old Testament, Old Covenant law. That's a law in which you try to be good so God will love you. You try to follow all the commandments so that you can possibly be accepted by God. No. That's not Christianity. Christianity is God says, I know you can't keep those laws. So I'm going to do this thing for you where Jesus is going to keep all the laws for you, and then he's going to die and he's going to take your sin, and you just have to trust in him, and I'll make you a new person. And after I've given you this new life, I'd like to ask you to do this one thing, which is, would you love one another? Remember, Jesus says, I've got a new commandment. You're not loving one another so that God will accept you. You're just doing it because that's who you are now. So when he says, in this way, you'll fulfill the law of Christ, he's saying, Jesus told us to love one another. So how do we do that? There's going to be all kinds of ways to carry one another's burdens, right? So sometimes it's time, and sometimes time is the hardest thing for us to give. It's like, you know, that's going to take me 3 hours. I'd rather write a check or whatever, you know, but taking time, and which means I'm probably not going to do something that I had planned to do. So a couple of weeks ago, Ron and Vera White had to move. And so our men's group on Thursday morning went over and helped them move. You know, as a guy, I thought, well, they're on the second floor. They're moving to the first one. They just throw everything over the balcony and then it'll be done. But the guys were much more sensitive than that. And they actually took everything, put it in place. And then, of course, guys, you know, yesterday, all these guys came to our house and took this stuff, and it only took an hour, but time is difficult to give sometime. Money. We have a benevolence fund. Mark, I don't think, mentioned this, but we have a benevolence fund in our church, which is pretty sizable, because sometimes people don't tell us when they need stuff. It's there for when people have something go wrong in their lives, and we can't take over your whole life for you, but there's a bunch of money sitting there. And so if you have a need, please don't be bashful. Come and say, hey, look, you know, I don't know if this qualifies, but here's a need we've got. Or maybe you've got a close friend and they don't want to say anything, but you say, you know what, I think they could probably use some help here. That's what that's for, to carry that burden. It's an incredible burden sometimes. Companionship. I've got a friend named Jim, and when I moved to Colorado the first time, we keep moving to Colorado and coming back, but we joked about Raton Pass. If you've ever gone through, you know, New Mexico into Colorado, there's a pass, and every once in a while, if it snows, it's pretty difficult to get over. But we knew that when I was going, it wasn't going to be difficult, but Jim said, hey, that Raton Pass, that can be really tough. I think I should go with you. I think we just wanted a road trip, you know, so we got in this van and drove over there, and every time I go over Raton Pass, I think of Jim, because he just, you know, it was a little burden, but it was kind of fun at the same time. You know, it wasn't a lot of hardship, but he took out about 4 days out of his work life and drove me up to Colorado. So we were there last week, and the reason we were there, outside of everything else, trying to find a house and all, was our son graduated from Colorado Christian University. And that was a big moment. He'd actually finished the work in December, and then he's walking in, you know, last week. So Friday night, he has this ceremony where he's hooded. That's where you put a hood on. And then the next day is the big ceremony with all the hundreds and hundreds of people. And Eric Metaxas spoke. It was awesome. It was a great, you know, deal. And I was sitting there thinking, first of all, a good friend of ours, Ron Stewart, flew all the way up there just to come. He got up at 3:30 in the morning, and he came up there just to be at David's graduation. Why would you do that? Because he's so bored with life here that he just wanted to go up and do that. But I've told you, and if David ever listens to this, David, I love you. David's my son. You know, the girls, our daughters, they just like everything. Just kind of everything went perfectly for them in some ways in life. And David hit the wall late high school, started spiraling down and went into some pretty dark places, and I didn't respond very well and didn't even know a lot of stuff, and then early college was even worse, and so that was really tough. And then he finally kind of resurfaced and graduated from college and got a degree in something that he ended up not liking and not wanting to do. So he came here and tried that out, decided that's not for me, I'm struggling. And so, as he's trying to put his life back together, which is a pretty big burden, our friend Ron Stewart decided to do something that I didn't even know was going on for a while. He asked our son David, because David was living here with us, if he would come over to his house and Ron would cook him breakfast. And then they would study the Bible together. And then sometime they wouldn't cook breakfast, they'd go to a restaurant. And what Ron did, I couldn't have done. I'm the dad. Ron's a friend. They were family friends, so David trusted Ron. They'd kind of grown up together. Ron was there when our twins were born, you know. And so all this is going on, and I don't even really know it's going on. David's just going out to have breakfast with somebody. And so what Ron did was Ron carried part of that burden of David trying to figure out, who am I? Do I believe anything? What's my life going to be like at all? Ron couldn't take over David's whole life, but a big part of David graduating this last weekend was Ron Stewart. And I'm so grateful for that because he carried part of that load. It's amazing. John Piper said this. Think about it. He said, some of you wonder what you're supposed to do with your life. Here's a vocation that will bring you more satisfaction than if you became a millionaire 10 times over. Develop the extraordinary skill for detecting the burdens of others and devote yourself daily to making them lighter. Let me read that again. Develop the extraordinary skill for detecting the burdens of others and devote yourself daily to making them lighter. Isn't that what Paul's saying? You want to be a real church? Carry each other's burdens. Now, 3, 4, and 5, I'm going to go through kind of quickly. He says, if anyone thinks there's something when they're not, they deceive themselves. I like the way the New Living translates this. It says in verse 3, if you think you're too important to help someone, you're only fooling yourself. You are not that important. So you have two different, you know, ends of the spectrum. You got the person who goes, I am way too important to be helping this person. You know, like, you got a problem, I got a plane to catch. And so some people were like, I don't want to jump in there. I've got my hands dirty. I don't want to mess with you. That's too much time. I'll just, whatever. I don't want to. Or the Pharisee, that you're down there, I'm up here. But then there's the other person that goes too far. They help people, but they get their whole meaning in life and their security and significance and identity out of helping people and not really helping them, usually enabling them. That's called codependency. Codependency is when I get all of my identity from helping someone else take care of their whole life. I'm not walking in helping them with one thing. I'm going to take over everything. And even if they're doing something wrong, I just let them keep doing that because I'm going to be there no matter what. And it's sick. It's codependent. So he says, each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to somebody else. For each one should carry their own load. Each one should carry their own load. Now, if you're thinking at this time, you're going, wait a minute. In verse 2, it said, carry each other's burdens. And in verse 5, it says, each one should carry their own load. What's the deal? Which is it? Am I supposed to carry people's burdens or carry my own load? What's it supposed to be? Well, guess what? Here's where the Greek comes in. There's two different words. And the word for carry your own load is baros, and it means an extraordinary weight, something I'm not geared to be able to lift. And then in verse 5, it says load. It's the Greek word fortion, which means a normal daily weight. I thought I'd come up with some fantastic pictures to help you visualize this. So here's a guy on the left, and he obviously has too much going on. It's like it's just killing him, right? That's me carrying my boxes over to the storage unit without the guys. And then here's this gal, and she's got a day pack on, and you don't think, oh, she really needs a lot of help. No, she's got about as much as you should have. It's not really slowing her down. We took this backpack trip with our singles group back in the mid-80s. And Darlene and I went there with 15 other people. And they said, just get some good boots and clothes and show up and we'll give you everything else. So all of us knucklehead Texans that, you know, were like from 400 feet went to 10,000 feet. And we got there and they gave us all the stuff we needed. They said, here's your backpack. Here's your tent. Here's a thing called a fly. Here's a thing for your food. Everybody gets the same stuff, right? Everybody's got to carry the same stuff. But then at the end, they said, okay, now we're doing the meals. So what we're going to do is every meal, we're going to put it in a big bag, and it's going to be the meal for everyone. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, every single day. And people's minds are, their heads are spinning. They're going, wait a minute. I want breakfast on the first day because it's going to be light and I'll get rid of it quickly and I'll be fine for the rest of the trip, right? Or maybe lunch on the second day, whatever. This gal named Heidi, poor Heidi, she had never done this before. She gets dinner on the last day. So it's this massive thing and it weighs a lot. She's going to have to carry it all week and she's just not doing so good a couple days in. And some gracious guy comes and says, listen, Heidi, how about we switch out? I got like lunch on the second day. You got dinner on the last day. And they switched. He said, you got too heavy a load. I'm going to take it. We'll switch. That's the difference. So let me ask you, I just kind of made up some things. You tell me which of these is a heavy burden or a light load. Let's say you're in school and you take a test. Now you kind of have to think of that, do that for yourself, right? Some tests are harder than others. And as we walk through this, our staff realized some of these things, can be taken both ways. So you lose a loved one. Now, if you lose your grandmother, she's 99 years old, you loved her, you had great times with her, she had a full life, she fell asleep. It's not going to change your life completely, but you lose a spouse, everything comes to a screeching halt. And we have people in this church that's happened to them recently. You go through a divorce, you battle drug addiction, try to stick to a budget, you decide on a college, you get depressed a couple times a year. Maybe you get depressed every day. You go to the dentist. You can never remember exactly what day you're supposed to go, right? It's like, because you don't really want to go. But you go to the dentist, you look for a job. Some of these things are like, it may be tough, but it's my backpack for the day. I've got to carry my own load. And some of these are just really heavy. How do we know? We got to come alongside each other. We got to get to know each other enough to know that person is carrying too much and they might not see a word. Or you might say, can I do anything for you? They go, no, I'm fine. And maybe they're not. So let me close with a story of something that happened to me several years ago. I lost a job in a church. They came to me and said, Steve, we just don't want you anymore. It wasn't a sin. It wasn't something I'd done wrong. They just said, we just want somebody else. It was pretty rough. It was traumatic for me, for our family. It also happened, they also did this to two other people like the next week. That didn't really help, but I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, maybe I should never be a pastor again. And what are we going to do? And where do things go from here? And I just felt totally lost. Like darkness and embarrassment and trauma and loss and what the heck is going to happen now. And there was a pastor I knew, lived a couple streets over. His name was Steve Brooks. And Steve, we weren't really close friends, even though our daughter had dated his son for a little bit, so we kind of knew each other. And he was another pastor in town, and he's a great guy, and I knew that much about him. And he also had been the president of the Reformed Church in America for a couple years. But Steve reached out to me, he came over and he called and he said, Steve, he called me and said, I heard this happened to you. And I said, yeah. And he said, I have to have this ear operation. Would you preach at my church for the next 4 weeks? I'm like, sure, that'd be great. And so I go over there for 4 weeks and it was just invigorating. And he trusts me to do this and it was exciting and fun. And then the last day, the fourth week of that preaching series, even though he'd had some problems with his ear, Steve came up. He said, let's serve communion together. So we stood up there together. We served communion to his church. And then he said, I want all of the Hickson family to come up here. So he brought Darlene and the kids up there, and they're still kind of in shock too. And he stands us up and he prays for us and he says, Steve's a really good pastor and he's going through a difficult time and this is a great family. And he just publicly affirmed me. I never would have asked for that. I was kind of embarrassed, but it was like, how does he know what I need? And then, you know, I went and did some other things. And then Steve calls me up. He goes, I'm in the RCA. That's the Reformed Church of America. There's one in Denver that needs a pastor for a year. They don't need a pastor for any longer than that, but just a year. Would you like to do that? I go, you mean like a job? Yeah, I need a job. And so I went, and it was wonderful. I loved it. And then I finished out that year, and it was great. It was kind of weird. I was an interim pastor. People would come up and go, hey, when are we going to get a real pastor? I'm like, okay, well, it's kind of under the radar, but that's okay with me. And then I finished that year, and then Steve goes, hey, I could help you plant a church over here. I'm like, I don't know if I'm a church planter, but just what in the world is this guy doing? He's got a life of his own. But he knew the burden that I had, and he came alongside, and he did all this stuff. And when I look back, it's just like, God used Steve Brooks to keep me going. You know, I was going to start this other church, and then here, Crossroads popped up, and I came here. And then Steve got ALS right after that, and 2 years later, he died. And I don't know how many other people he served like that. But Steve Brooks came, and he carried the load that I had as much as he could, and he died. So if you want a little bit of motivation, you just read Isaiah 53, right? It says this. Sure, this is 700 years before Jesus is born, but it says, surely he's borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. All we like sheep have gone astray, and the Lord has laid on him the huge burden of the iniquity of us all. He lived this life we should have lived, and he died the death that we deserved, and he carried our burden gladly, and now he still carries our burdens, right? But he carried the biggest one we had. And now he says, would you mind, in the body of Christ, finding out when somebody else has a little bit too much to carry and coming alongside? And that produces unity. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for knowing what we needed, not shying away from it. You could have stayed in heaven, but you came here. It was a dangerous place. And you took upon your shoulders the burden that we try to carry, and we will never be able to. You carried our sin. You took care of it. It crushed you. But you rose again, alive and well, and you welcome us into your family. And we're so glad to be there. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.